Okay, thanks a lot for inviting me here. So I was here twice last year and I'm here again. So if I come next time, I'm going to apply for permanent residency. So this is a paper that has been submitted to a journal and it's on the Math Archive preprint server. So if you want to have a closer look at this. And it's an effort to build a pricing model that is realistic and at the same time very tractable. So there is always, okay, so this balance that you strive for to have something which is realistic enough and still tractable. So that's the outline here. So I'll first introduce the model that we're considering here. So it's more a class of a model. And then I'll give you a particular example, but you can add factors if you like to this one. And then I'll talk about pricing and in the third part about hatching in a model like this. So the main focus here will be on European equity derivatives. But the underlying might go default, okay? And so the motivation for this is, so what are the main risk factors if you look at the typical equity derivatives? There's the stock returns, then there might be volatility, there might be a default risk of the underlying stock, and we can also have stochastic interest rates here. So in the first two parts, I'll set up the model and I think about pricing just by taking expectation under some pricing measure. And then in the last part of the paper, I will also think about hedging these products. And then the idea there is to complete the model by adding enough tradables to hedge away all sources of risk. And so if you think about these different sources of risk, then you would think, okay, maybe you need a stock to hedge the stock returns, a Manila option to hedge the volatility, a corporate bond or a CDS to hedge default risk, and government bonds, for example, to hedge interest rates. So this is just a very rough picture here. I mean, of course, if you have stochastic volatility on the volatility, you need another option, for example. So it depends on the particular model you're looking at and how many factors you have in the model, how many instruments you will need to hedge away everything. Okay, so that's the ingredients we need to cook our model. So we have a state space, which is capital M dimensional. And we have a time homogeneous Markov process on this state space. So that's a stochastic process. It's Markov process and moves around on this state space. The first little m components will always be non-negative and the last little n components are free. Okay. And so this is notation from general Markov theory. So you have a process X. Typically, that's the canonical process on a path space, for example, right continuous path with left limits. And Px is a whole family of probability measures where a P corresponding to a particular X means the distribution of the process given you started at this particular point, little x in the state space. Okay, and then that's some of the notation I will be using, so maybe I'll remind you later. So this calligraphic I are just the first little m components, calligraphic J are the last little n components. And then we also need a standard Poisson process here, which is independent of X, and this will help us model the default. We really only need the first jump of this Poisson process, so you really only need an exponentially distributed random variable here. And then, okay, this thing here will be Euclidean scalar product, this thing, even if X and Y have complex components. And so, okay, the general model is like this. So ST is the price of the stock. And it's an exponential of three parts. And there is a little st, which is kind of the log stock returns, but it's really the excess log stock returns above what you would get if you would invest in a money market account, and then also this guy can go default at the stopping time, so it can vanish, can be killed. So you expect a spread for this risk, okay? So this is all under the risk neutral measure. And the particular form how you model this in this model is XT is your capital N-dimensional Markov process, and all these components S, little r and little lambda are just affine functionals of the components of X, okay? So little st is a constant plus the linear combination of all the components of X. Little r is the risk-free interest rate. It's a constant plus the linear combination of the first little m components, because those were non-negative and I want to keep the riskless interest rate non-negative. And the same thing for the, this is going to be the default rate of the stock. And then you integrate little r to get capital R, and you integrate little lambda to get capital lambda. Okay? And default time is the first time that the Poisson process time changed by the cumulative intensity jumps for the first time. Okay? So the default here is contrary to what Tom is doing at the moment, is somewhat reduced form. It's coming from a Poisson process, but the intensity of the Poisson process can depend on the factors of the underlying Markov process and can be related to the excess log returns of the stock and the interest rate. Sure. So little s can be negative, yeah. But I take the exponential of this whole.
No, I mean, what means excess return? It just log stock, no?
It's just log stock, except this whole thing here is the. I don't know. So and that's just a model. But some other people, I mean, you might, if someone else writes this model, maybe he would write the exponential of this whole thing and call this the log return. But I want to decompose the log return into these three components. Okay? It's equivalent to each other. It's just two different ways of formulating it. Why do I want to decompose what I have in the exponential here into three different components? Well, because I'm choosing this guy so that it compensates this. And then when I'm pricing, I will discount by capital RT. And then in the end, I need a condition that guarantees that exponential of just little st will be a martingale under my pricing measure. Okay? It's just a form of the model. I mean, you could do it differently, probably. You would, maybe. I don't know. So far I was pretty general, so I just said X is a general Markov process, time homogeneous, okay? But if you do that, you can go up to a certain point, because you will always be able to write down Kolmogorov backward equations for your functionals. These will be partial integral differential equations, but you will probably not be able to solve them. So now we're going to narrow the class of Markov processes considerably that we're working with, and the choice here is affine Markov processes. And so this is an incomplete list of the literature in affine Markov processes. So the first ones were particular models, so the Wasicek model for interest rates, Cox-Ingersoll-Ross model for interest rates, then Duffy-Kahn also, Dye-Singleton had a classification for interest rate models. These were all affine models, but these were particular instances, and at that time, I don't know if they already called them affine models, but they certainly exploited the structure, the affine structure. Then you have affine models of stochastic volatility, the Stein and Stein, the Heston model, for example. Then you have a literature in reduced form affine models for credit risk, Lando, for example. And then, so this is a paper which is related to what we do. So this is a particular model which is similar to the class of models we propose here. Then recently there were papers on general theory of affine Markov processes trying to give the most general form such an affine Markov process can be. And I mean, all of these papers here are just diffusion models, but then here you have jumps, and you can have finite activity jumps, but also infinite activity jumps. And so this is actually quite an active research area right at the moment, also with affine processes, not necessarily taking values in Rn plus cross Rn, but also affine processes taking values in matrix spaces to model correlation structures or covariance structures. So then this definition is taken from this paper here by Duffy, Filippo, and Schochermeier, which gives a nice count of general affine processes in the kind of state spaces we're working with here. And the definition is a Markov process is regular affine if there exist functions phi and psi such that the characteristic function of the transition probabilities of this Markov process are of exponential affine form, meaning it's an exponential of this form which is affine in the starting point x. Okay. So this is the general Markov theory approach to defining stuff. So it's just a Markov process in the sense that you say this thing only depends, where this thing is going only depends on where it is at the moment, and you just specify the transition probabilities. Of course, you can realize many of those as solutions of the stochastic differential equations or stochastic differential equation with jumps, and basically what it means for the solution of the stochastic differential equation to be affine is that the coefficients in the equations are affine. So in this generality, you characterize the Markov process by the infinitesimal generator, okay? And it can be shown that the general affine Markov process is a Feller process, and it has an infinitesimal generator of this form. So if you're familiar with Markov process and infinitesimal generators, then you can see from the generator what the characteristic of the process is. So this coefficient here acting on the second derivative of f gives you the diffusion, the diffusion matrix of the process. So this is a fixed symmetric positive semi-definite matrix, as are these alphas here, but then you have a linear combination of these alphas with the non-negative components of x. So this, the diffusion coefficient depends in an affine way on the first non-negative components of the process. This guy acting on the derivative gives you the drift of the process, and again it's an affine function of the position of the process. This gives you the intensity of a jump to default. And this whole part here gives you the intensities of jumps of the process to other points in the state space, and also the distribution of the jumps. Once you jump, what is the distribution of where you're going to jump? Okay. So this is the general form of the generator of an affine Markov process, and there are admissibility conditions on all of these coefficients. I mean, these matrices have to be of a specific form. These measures here have to satisfy certain conditions, but I'm not going to give you all of these admissibility conditions. So one additional technical assumption we need here to do what we want to do is these integrability conditions on the jump measures, which basically mean that your jumps have exponential moments. So that's, we need that. I don't think it's too much of a restriction. Okay, and so the whole trick or the whole appeal of these affine processes in large part of finance is that if you write down the corresponding Kolmogorov backward equation for many problems that appear in finance, it decomposes and you obtain a coupled system of ordinary differential equations, which are generalized Ricotti equations. In some cases, you can't just write the solution explicitly, and sometimes you have to solve it on a computer, but it's very fast on a computer. Okay? So you can calculate phi and psi, the two functions that appear in the characteristic function of the transition probability, from the coefficients in the infinitesimal generator. So these coefficients completely determine your Markov process. Okay, so an easy example that fits into this framework is this one. So here I have a three-dimensional diffusion process. And the first two components are the two non-negative components, and these are just Cox-Ingersoll-Ross or square root processes. And the third component is this one, and this is going to be my little s, and then you can also have correlation between the three components of the Brownian motion here. So the little s here is just the last component. The RT is an affine combination of the first two non-negative components of the process, and the default intensity is an affine combination also of the first two non-negative components. Okay, so if I go back to what I had here, so this was S here, but then I am having a stochastic volatility here given by X1, and the stochastic interest rate and the default intensity also depend on the on X1 and X2. Okay, so this is the model and one particular example or specification of the model. And then, okay, how do you do pricing? And the whole idea is that you exploit the affine structure here, and you can write down Ricotti equations. Okay, so what do we want to do? So for the moment, we want to price payoffs of the form deterministic function phi of st, okay, the stock price s at some time little t. So these are general European payoffs. And then some instances are if phi is just one, that's a government bond. If phi is one, given that x is zero, meaning that the stock is still alive at this time, would be a corporate bond. That's the call option, and that's a power payoff. So these things are not really traded in the U.S. at least, if you can price these efficiently, then you can use them to approximate others with these. Okay. And then, okay, so there is also, Tom is also working on methods like this, but then so some of the papers that have pioneered this is a paper by Carmadon and then extensions by Lee and then many others where you use you calculate this, and then you use this to do an inverse Fourier transform to obtain prices of European options, call options, put options, binary options. Most of those can be done with this method. And so these methods, I mean, have been done for the case where you don't have default. So we're going to extend these methods to our framework here, although it's not really a big step because basically all the proofs go, or the arguments go through. Okay, so what we need to do is we introduce this function, little ht, which is expectation of exponential minus capital RT plus C log ST, which you could write as the discounted C power of ST, okay? But C can be complex here. I mean, if C is just on the imaginary axis, then that's something like a characteristic function and will always exist. But we want to define this maybe on a complex neighborhood around the imaginary axis. Question is, will it still exist? Okay, because you might have integrability problems there. So what you do is you introduce this set here, which is the region in the complex plane where this expectation for of real part of C is finite. Okay. And now, so here I use my assumption that my jumps have exponential moments. If I don't have this assumption, it could be that this expectation is really only finite on the imaginary axis. And as soon as I move away, this expectation is plus infinity. But if I have this assumption that my jumps have finite exponential moments, then you can show that this region here will be vertical strip in the complex plane, maybe the whole complex plane, maybe a half space, or maybe just a vertical strip, but it will always be open and it will contain the imaginary axis. Okay? So the whole trick is to characterize this function h on the imaginary axis by a PDE, or ordinary differential equation, and then extend from there by analytic extension. Okay, from this very formula here, you already see that this thing is analytic in C, because you can differentiate this in C by differentiating under the expectation by some dominated convergence theorem. Okay, so it's immediate from this formula that this guy is analytic in C. Okay, so to go where you want to go is you do this simple trick here. You extend your state space, you add two coordinates, and you also add a symmetry state, this delta. And then you consider this process yt, which is xt plus rt and lambda t as additional components. And this one will still have affine structure. And it can vanish, it can go to the symmetry, but that's still included in this affine framework. Okay, and now I'm just giving you the generalized affine, the generalized Ricotti equations that we will need here. So it's not so important that you understand the actual form of this. The important thing is that that's a coupled system of ordinary differential equations. And I need to give you the coefficients f and g. And so here they are. They are given in terms of the coefficients that you saw in the infinitesimal generator of the Markov process. The thing to watch out for here is the first term in F. It's actually not so important what F is. Okay, let's go back to this system of Ricotti equations. So the real ordinary differential equation is this one. It's the first little m components of B. Okay, that's an ordinary differential equation for B, or the first little m components of B. Once you have B, then you just integrate to get A. And also the last components of B are just this exponential form. It's just, yes? Yeah, okay. So let's look at this guy here, the first little m components of B, and let's go to the coefficients F and G. So I'm looking at G. So I have a square here in U, okay? I have linear terms, linear term constant. So this would be a typical classical Ricotti equation. Sure. And so I have these integral terms here, and these will be exponential in U. So that's why I generalized Ricotti, because for Ricotti equation, you don't have this term here. So that's why general Ricotti equation. And of course, you mentioned it. I mean, these guys, depending on the sign, can have solutions for all the t, or they might blow up in finite time because of the quadratic term, but also the exponential term here. And that's the thing that can happen here. So you will always have a solution for sufficiently small t, but it can blow up in finite time, and it will be related to moment explosions, that the expectation of the P moment of our process will explode. Okay, so I should speed up a little bit. So the important thing is you introduce a candidate for HT, which I call little L here, and it's defined as an exponential of the solutions A and B of your generalized Ricci equation. Then you have a domain V, basically, which is where the solution of your Ricci equations are finite. Then you get relatively easily that H is equal to L on the imaginary axis. And then from there, you extend by analytic extension. And this gives you this result here. So U is where the expectation was finite. It's an open subset in C. It contains this thing, and it agrees with L for all C, which are in a good set. I mean, I'm going a little bit fast, but the idea here is you will solve your Ricci equations, and basically you know when your Ricci equations have a finite solution, the corresponding expectation will also be finite, and the two will be the same. Then you can give conditions for the discounted stock price to be a martingale. And then you can, you can value power payoffs, and you can value European call options, for example, by this extension of this Karmadon inverse Fourier transform method, for example. And, so this is a picture comparing the same model with default and without default. So this is implied volatility surface without default. And the upper one is implied volatility surface with default. So if you add default, you raise implied volatilities. Yes. But the particular shape of this, of course, then depends on the particular parameter. So we just chose a couple of parameters here. And so this is a picture of moment explosions in the same model. So you see the zeroth moment always. So this is the moment. These are positive moments, negative moments. And this is the explosion time when the expectation of the moment explodes. So I should wrap up. Or what's... I have a little bit more. I understand. So now we want to value general European contingent claims, meaning phi is any function such that the expectation of the discounted payoff is finite. And so this is a thing my PhD student did, it's heuristic. So many people have proposed to approximate general payoffs by European calls, for example, by a linear combination of European calls, or by powers. And so what he proposes is try a mixture of the two. And what he found in this example is that the mixture works much better for this particular example. So let me show. So what this says is, in number one, he uses as approximation European calls with different strikes. In a second attempt, he uses power payoffs with different powers. And in a third attempt, he uses a mixture of European calls and powers. And the specifics of this are not so important. So what he argues is, so this is the error in the approximation. And so this is the mixture method, and the scale is different. So it's much smaller scale here. So the approximation is much better here. So. This is a thing to try, maybe if you ever need to do this. So we were thinking about what are So the state, what's the state of derivatives that are being traded? I mean, so 3 years back, they were becoming more and more complex, more and more exotic, but this trend has reversed a little bit since the financial crisis, so the trend is back towards more vanilla options. And so we were thinking of what kind of general European payoff could we try to approximate that we cannot better do by Fourier methods directly, right? So that's what we came up with, is this truncated lock that I probably had before. So what we approximated here was this logarithm of x truncated from below by a constant k, and the motivation for this is variance swaps, because there is this relation between variance swaps and log payoffs. So what's a variance swap? So variance swap on a future of a stock is so say the future is a diffusion, no jumps in itself, but possibly the underlying stock can go default. Okay. At the final time, little t, st is equal to the future price, and then there is a cap, which is a positive number. And then what you probably see in most talks on variance swaps based on a diffusion model without default is just this part here, this difference here between the sum of this logarithm of FTI divided by FTI minus 1 squared, which is realized volatility of the future over the time period, minus some k, okay? So this would be the payoff of a variance swap. So you receive realized volatility and you pay a constant k, for example. But then in real world contracts, these contracts are of this form, so they include a constant c. So it's either this thing here, this difference, or if it's higher than some constant c, it's just a constant c. So if you have a diffusion model and you have no possibility of default, you just neglect this constancy because it's never going to be attained. Okay? But if you have jumps in your model or you have possibility of default, then this constant can be attained. So this goes back to papers by Dupire and Neuberger. So if you have a diffusion model and you don't have default, then you neglect the cap because the probability is very small that it's going to be attained. And you approximate this sum here by the integral of sigma squared. And you note that you can write this integral in this form here, okay, just by Itô's formula. And then, since this was a martingale under the pricing measure, this has price zero. So if you want to price this guy here, you just need to price the lock contract. Okay, so again, the lock contract doesn't exist, but it helps you price variance. So with default now, the cap is important, because if you go to default, the cap can be attained. So you modify this whole argument a little bit and you write this payoff as this part in case you don't go default, and plus this part in case you go default, and you rewrite it like this, but then again you obtain martingales here and you have a truncated log payoff here instead of the log payoff, where the little k here is related to the cap c. Okay. So if you want to value this guy, basically you need to calculate the expectation of the truncated log payoff, and that's why we chose this as an example in what we did before. Okay, so then let me talk about the last part, which is, so this was just, I built the model, I assumed everything was already under the risk-neutral probability measure, and then I just calculated prices by taking expectation on the risk-neutral probability measure, so I just needed to calculate these expectations. But now, what if I want to hedge? Okay. So then, I need as many assets, roughly, as I have sources of risk, so that I can hedge away every source of risk by an asset. And the jumps that I possibly have in my process cannot be continuous, because then I would need infinitely many S's to hedge this. So I'm going to impose that the jump measures are discrete. So if you have a jump, you can only jump into finitely many different points. So to be completely rigorous, now you have to assume that X has a realization of a stochastic differential equation of this form, where mu will be an affine function of X. Sigma squared basically will be an affine function of X. And I will have jumps of this form, where all these guys here, so this is a combination of compound Poisson processes, where the Poisson processes, the first one has constant intensity, and the other ones have affine intensity in the underlying Markov state process. And the distribution of these jump sizes here is given to you by the measures, jump measures mu and mu I. Okay, it's just a diffusion, but you can have isolated Poisson jumps. The Poisson rates are possibly stochastic. Now, it's important that W is n-dimensional, capital N, where N was the dimension of my state space. These guys are Poisson, and these jumps are IID for fixed I. Okay, now on a complete the market, so I need this many tradable instruments. So that's the number of independent Brownian motions that I have. This is the number of jumps with constant intensity, and these are the number of jumps with linear intensity, and then I also need an instrument to hedge against default, the case that I jump into default. So I assume I have I have some payoff now that I don't have here on the slide that I want to hedge. And so I assume I have reference instruments which are liquidly traded, and I need a capital L of them, and the phis are the payoffs of those, and the little TI2, T1, T2, and so on are the maturities of those. Okay, so the idea is you calculate sensitivities of your reference instruments with respect to the underlying Brownian motions and all the jumps. And you calculate sensitivities of the thing that you want to hedge, and then you try to find a linear combination that hedges away all the sensitivities. Okay? So the classical Greeks will be the partial derivatives with respect to the Q's component of X, of the price of the, so the phi of ST is now the instrument that I want to hedge. The sensitivities of the jumps are corresponding to the jump measure that has constant intensity, are the difference of the price of your instrument after you have jumped compared to before you have jumped, according to this jump with constant intensity, and then you also have sensitivities corresponding to the jumps that have linear intensity, and you have a sensitivity to default. And now the trick is, and so this might look complicated, because you would have to do it for every T, so you have to make sure that you can do it dynamically, so you would have to do it for every maturity until your finite maturity. What you have to do is you have to find a linear combination theta L of your reference instruments such that the linear combination of all the Greeks is equal to the Greeks of the thing that you wanna hedge, of course. So the market is complete if this system of linear equations has a unique solution for all phi, but then if you have a particular phi, you just worry about this phi. But then you can show in the Hessian model with stochastic interface and jump to default that I had up before, this one is complete if you can trade in a stock, in a government bond, in a corporate bond, and in a vanilla option, for example. And this following non-degenerate condition holds. Okay, so this will ensure you that your system will always have a solution. Okay, so the conclusion is this is a general affine model. for equity derivatives that incorporate stochastic volatility, stochastic interest rates, and jump to default. So we introduced this function little h, and then we characterized it in terms of solutions of coupled system of Ricotti equations. You can price in semi-closed form, meaning you can find Fourier transform in terms of solutions of Ricotti equations, and then you can use these Fourier transform to transform back efficiently. And if you make all these additional assumptions on how the jumps look like and how many instruments you can trade, then you can complete the model and you can start thinking about hedging certain products by trading in these underlyings. Thanks a lot.